Hey, Dad, here's another episode of this podcast that I'm now calling Patriarch with your wife, Stephanie. Isn't it great? Isn't she great? Enjoy.
I need to hold this at the mic when I...
Yeah.
I have to hold it like this all the time.
I would say, like, just plan to keep it there, though, because people usually, when they go, like...
Okay.
Forget,
and then they start talking. Okay.
But, you know, whatever.
It's exciting.
Is it? Are you having the most fun?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, great. I love it. Okay, so let's start with warming up and making sure we understand microphones.
Okay.
What did we have for dinner last night?
We went to this, what is his name? Spike Africa.
That's right.
Spike Africa for fish.
What'd you get?
I got the halibut Tuscan style.
Cool.
Am I close enough on the mic?
You're good.
Okay.
Yeah, you can talk in your normal voice, though.
Okay, am I louder?
It feels like you're being a little quiet, and I know it's because of the environment.
Yeah, probably.
But you'll be okay.
All right. Also, I've heard myself on video before.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like that loud voice.
Do you not like your voice on recordings?
No.
Nor do I. And did you know that nobody does?
I've heard that.
It's because I guess you hear your voice different through your ear. You hear it bassier, and you're like... It's not that your voice is bad. It's that it's weird recognizing your own voice. You're like, that's me, but it's not me. It's a bizarro me.
That's what I've heard.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to... So there you go. I think you're ready.
Okay.
I think you're going to nail this.
If I use my real voice, I'll be ready.
I love it. Okay. So first question. Some of these are warm-up, nothing questions. Softball. What's your first memory?
My first memory.
Just get your brain going.
I actually know this right off the top of my head.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I'm working in Dr. Goss' dad's optometry office.
Oh, you're going straight to dad.
Oh, I thought you meant my first memory of dad.
Give me your first memory of dad, too. That's cool.
My first memory?
No, give me your first memory of dad.
Okay.
I like this.
Yeah, so I'm working at Dr. Goss' dad's office. I'm like the receptionist contact lens specialist.
Yeah.
A friend of mine is dating a friend of his, so it was all arranged, but I didn't know. And he comes walking in, and he carries this box for this older lady that works with me. And I just thought he was dreamy right off the start. They did him up. They had like this turquoise shirt that brought out the blue in his eyes. They did his hair. It was all
Who's
a setup.
They?
Gina Robinson.
Okay.
No, Gina. Well, Gina Davis, who married Dave Robinson. That ended in a train wreck.
Okay.
We, however, worked out pretty well.
That's funny.
But yeah, that was pretty funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Coming in with a box for an old lady. Nothing sells like
very,
that.
Very chivalrous, you know what I mean?
I get it.
Chivalrous, yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. Nice smile.
Yeah.
Nice smile and blue eyes. I was sold. He not so much, but I was.
That's funny. Okay, well, I'll dive into the relationship a little bit more later. But okay, for now... tell me about your childhood home.
Well, we had several because I was an Air Force brat. So my dad was in the Air Force. I was born in England, and then we moved all around. We moved to California, where my younger sister was born. We moved to the Philippines.
Yeah.
We moved to Louisiana, and then back to California, where my dad retired.
Yeah.
So kind of bounced around a lot. I think I went to like 5 different elementary schools. So one single one does not stand out.
Nothing sticks out.
Not so much.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then some of these two are just like general questions, and if any memory sticks out or whatever, share that. I'm curious. What pops into your head? Usually that means it's interesting.
Okay.
How did your parents meet, Steph? Wendy and Jim.
Yeah, so Wendy
James
was 100% British. She lived in England.
Yeah.
And my dad was the Yankee Air Force guy who came over and swept her off her feet.
Classic.
Much to her parents' dismay.
Yeah.
The cycle continued later.
Yep.
But anyway, she was like 18-year-old bride. They got married, and then he moved her 3,000 miles away. So, yeah.
Controversy.
Interesting. Yeah. But that's worked out 52 years later.
Yeah.
Plus, because...
That's incredible.
That's marriage, yeah.
Yeah, because that's marriage.
But they got married a few years into the relationship, so probably together 54 years at this point.
That's bananas.
What's that? Yeah.
That's bananas.
It is.
A bunch of bananas.
It's hard to believe.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's how they met.
That's funny.
A blind date. It was a blind date for them.
I mean... What are the odds? I guess it's just a different time.
Could you imagine
you go on
a blind date?
You see some 18-year-old girl. You're like, yeah, let's move with me. not just like move in with me. Move with me. We're going way far away.
Yeah,
I like that.
Hop the ocean. Hop the pond.
Okay. How about this? How did your family celebrate holidays when you were a child? Again, this is probably a stick out thing. Is there anything that like...
Yeah, no, this is pretty good. So there was a time where we went to church on occasion, and not frequently, but there was a little time. I remember a few like little Christmas pageant-y things. Mm-hmm. That happened. But yeah, like Christmas at home, my mom would make dinner. We'd have the Christmas crackers, you know, those British Christmas crackers.
Yeah.
That was big. Yeah, but always nice. Good memories. Two sisters. I was in the middle, so you can imagine.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, yeah. No, Easter was always, it stuck out too, because my mom would always put together little Easter baskets, like spring.
Yeah.
Like when we were little, it had candy and things like that. But when we were older, it was like a little perfume, some new underwear, some candy.
That's
but
cute.
Like, yeah, Easter, like spring. Yeah. That was kind of a thing. My mom used to make our clothes. So she would make like matching outfits. So for the three of us, the same little Easter dress or the same little Pepsi Cola dress. And we'd all be lined up like a little staircase.
Yeah.
With our matching clothes.
Like, oh man, I lost the reference. Movie where the
Brady
Stephen
Bench?
King.
No?
Stephen King. With the murderers,
oh God, no.
Jack Nicholson, with the twin
Shining.
Kids. The Shining, thank you.
Yeah, just add one more kid to that group, and that was us.
It's 150% scarier.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
I'm thinking Brady Bunch, and you're thinking Stephen King.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, shows you where I'm at.
Which one is more correct?
Okay. So, that's interesting. Spring stands out. So what, I guess, now thinking about it, how do you celebrate holidays, or how are anything that you pull from the Roberts traditions, or how do you think of holidays now?
Yeah, you know, kind of the same idea, just like family togetherness, traditional recipes. We still break out the Christmas crackers, like a little nod to that tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah, no Christmas pageants at the church. That's not happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the other stuff, getting together with family, hanging out, playing cards. My family's played cards their whole life, and so then we grew up doing that. You remember that. And so just kind of get those family get-togethers. Food, drink, cards.
Food, drink, cards. Yeah, playing games seems like a big part. That's a lot of how I think of our families getting together, is just... More cards with your side, and more risk with my dad's.
Yeah, risk.
That's how I think of it. Yeah.
No, that's fun. That's good stuff.
That's funny.
Yeah, and even your dad's side of the family, that's kind of blended with our traditions. Like there's certain dishes, recipes, but also the actual dishes themselves, like that your grandmother, dad's mom.
Like what?
She bought us one of our first years together, some beautiful Christmas platters and dishes, things that newlyweds and young people don't buy themselves.
Right.
And she really did a nice job of like helping us kind of establish that part of our kitchen. And so every year I'll get out like a special dish that grandma bought to, you know, get out at Christmas. And then her mom bought us a beautiful Christmas plate, Lenore, that we get out every year. So things like that are kind of traditional and special. And then not just the actual dishes, but then some of the food that goes into them. Like grandma makes her special seafoam punch.
Yep.
And Juliet likes to make that. You know,
does
just
she make that, really?
Yeah, she really does.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a long
time. Yeah, no, we didn't get it out this year, though. Hmm. Getting down the punch bowl is an effort. But no, you got to have enough people there to enjoy it. And,
that's
you know,
true.
Because you don't want a lot of that.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Actually, no, that's not true. I'll drink
You'll
a ton
drink
of
all of that.
I will. It's so good. Okay. That's funny. So this is you personally.
Okay.
Who are some of your heroes or people you look up to?
Ooh.
Vinny.
That's a good one.
Hey,
let me give this some thought.
Yeah. Get a good answer.
You know, I think my answer now as an adult is probably different than when I was younger.
Okay.
Like when I was younger, some of my heroes were newscasters, because that's what I wanted to go into, was like TV news. So I remember like writing a letter to Elaine Corral, Channel 2, KTVU News, and she actually wrote me back. And I'd ask her questions, you know, about the job and what should I study and what does it get paid and all those things. Now you could just easily look that up on the internet. So it's crazy.
Yeah, kids these days.
But then as I've gotten older, and probably because I teach and things like that, I think people more like, I think of like Misty Copeland, the first African America prima ballerina.
Okay.
You know, she's just, it's just impressive. Like people who have struggled and accomplished and, you know, followed their dream.
Mm-hmm.
And then also that girl in the Middle East comes to mind who tries to fight for girls to be educated everywhere.
Malala.
Yeah. But that just seems like maybe a for, you know, like, oh, that's who I'm supposed to say. But I have come to admire people like that.
That's fair.
But I should probably give that one some more thought because I know that there's some people out there that probably truly admire me on a personal level. But I do want to give that some thought.
You just said admire me.
No,
which I'm going to say is a Freudian
slip. Oh, whoops. People do admire me. No, that I'm sorry that I do admire.
No, that's fine.
That was a slip. Give me more coffee.
Very early.
Yeah, let me give that one some thought. Are you going to be able to like edit this all together so I sound articulate later?
No.
Oh.
That's not the goal of this. I might do a little editing,
all
but
right.
very little. And all Dad's right. probably going to hear this.
Just make me sound good.
Okay, so this is a broad one. What were... it makes me laugh.
Oh, I'm nervous it, now.
No, this is a bad... this one makes me laugh, and it's going to be bad that it makes me laugh. What were you thinking when 9/11 happened?
Oh, God. I do remember specifically.
Yeah, how do you remember it?
I do remember. Oh, my gosh.
I'm curious.
This was horrible. Okay.
It's a cultural landmark.
Yeah, well, I got one for you. So we lived in our little home on Valley Oak Way in Fairfield. You were with us at
Valley
the time.
Oak,
1063, I believe.
Sorry, 1063, you're correct.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And you were with us, but it was a school day.
That's
so
right.
I'm kind of, but, you know, you were going to Cooper, and that was year-round. So maybe
I was not going to Cooper.
Well, wait.
I was going to Vacapania.
No.
Yep, 100% confident on
could
that.
Could be. Yeah, was that the year?
Yeah.
Okay, you were going to school in Vacaville.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was working at Cambridge in Vacaville, but I thought I had to drop you off at school. Anyway, we were getting ready for work. Matthew was about a year old.
Little baby boy.
And I was pregnant with Juliet.
Yeah.
That was going on. And our phone rings, which never happened in the morning on a work day, and
right.
it was Uncle Mark, and he's like telling Dad, you got to turn on the TV. You got to see this. And so they're watching it, and I think they were even watching it when that second plane hit.
Yeah.
I think that happened while we were at home. And I just remember kind of being in a daze. You had to go to school. I had to go to work. And I think the thought that kept running through my head was, what kind of world are we bringing these kids into? Seriously.
Yeah.
Like Matthew's little, I'm pregnant with Jules, and here you are. I thought in elementary school, but I guess middle school.
Yes, 13.
And it's just like, oh my gosh, what's happening in this world, and what kind of world are we bringing you guys into?
Really? Yeah.
And all the rest of the day was like being stunned, just like being in a daze all day and having to kind of play it strong with little kids, but we didn't know what was happening. They didn't know what was happening.
That's
interesting. it was really very memorable that morning.
Yeah.
But not in a good way.
I remember being woken up to watch this.
Did Dad wake you up?
Yeah, Dad woke me up and he was like, you gotta see this. And I was like, what? And I think I went into your guys' room. That big Fairfield room where I remember like learning how to fake shave with my Ninja Turtles thing. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, that was funny. And just like watching it and being like, what is this? Like, it seems like a big deal. Everybody's stunned. But I remember like looking back to, especially as a teacher, was like, I remember even my teachers were like, we're going to watch what's happening. And like, they were trying to be cool, but like, they don't know shit.
No.
They don't know what's going on.
No one can comprehend it. Like, it was just incomprehensible.
It was truly a mind-boggling idea.
Yeah.
For civilians, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember, like, even Dad and Mark talking and saying, you know, was this just some random airplane that accidentally...
Right.
You know, and Dad was like, no. He knew right away. Like, no, that was not an accident.
Yeah, that
a plane like that does not, you know, go into a building like that.
Yeah.
And then no one actually thought the buildings would go down.
Yeah.
That they thought it would withstand that impact, which
I think
Dad called that too and was like, no, that, you know.
Yeah.
Just horrible. Horrible on so many levels.
That was a crazy day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey.
Boy, Steven.
It's just interesting. I don't know. It's interesting. It's a landmark, and I wonder what people remember of it. What
no,
memories
it's
of
like
evokes.
The JFK assassination question, right?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. That's our JFK assassination.
Yeah. Yeah. Sad, but true.
Everything changes, and you're like, what world are we living in?
Yeah.
Okay, so this. How about this? Tell me about your first job.
Okay, so my first job, well, my first job was as a teenager, and I was hired by my mom's boss, Duke Jones, and his wife, Vanna.
Sure.
And I was hired to clean their house, but also to iron their clothes. And oh my God, gross. To this day, I hate ironing. And not just gross for the ironing aspect, gross because they would leave their, they're not going to hear this, I hope. They would leave their clothes to be ironed on the ironing board and let them stack up and stack up. And then I think they had an animal, like a cat, who would come lay on the clothes. Something. Wow. So that when I applied heat and water to create steam, there was an odor that was just so nauseating. It was gross.
That is
gross. And then Duke was like, I want those creases sharp enough to shave with. He really wanted like sharp creases in his pants.
All right, buddy.
So that was a grueling job. And I think I got like 25 cents per article, per item of clothing.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Like, yeah.
And then my first like kind of real job was at Chick-fil-A in Solano Mall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What up, what up?
Became a crew leader, dressed like Doodles the chicken, handed out samples, got harassed by teenagers in the mall.
Sounds right.
It's a good first job. But I earned a scholarship at that job. You worked there 2 years and you would earn $1,000 toward college.
Yeah.
And I got that scholarship.
How significant was that for your education?
You know, like, I remember it kind of being a big deal, but I used it at Solano Community College.
Yeah.
But I was just more kind of proud of myself for earning it. Like,
yeah.
I don't really know, like, oh, it bought this book or that tuition or that class. But,
I guess,
you know, we kind of put ourselves through college. So it was like every little bit helped. So it was good.
Really cool.
And it was extra. It wasn't like, oh, I saved up the money I've already earned. It was like, okay, now here's a scholarship.
Oh. Yeah.
So that was kind of nice.
So going back, you said that you wanted to be a reporter as a kid and you wrote into
Elaine Corral.
That's incredible.
And Leslie Griffiths. I don't think she answered me back, though.
Fucking Leslie. You know what? We got to turn this off. We're going to go find that bitch. So you knew, like, you were very interested in this early on. Was that, like, I guess, did you know you were going to do that instant? Like, when did you know? Why reporter? Why?
You know, I think more than anything, I thought it'd be cool to be on TV. And I don't think this was ever a dream until, like, high school when you're supposed to start to figure out what you want to do. And I did know that I was better with words than I was with math.
Yeah.
So I definitely couldn't do anything math related.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seemed like a cool thing to do. Just cover the news, be on TV. It was more being the anchor part that I was interested in.
Yeah.
And then even when I went to Solano Community College, I thought, well, what can I do to help get ready for that career? And someone was like, oh, take a class in geography so you understand like world geography. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'll be good at that. So I started to kind of pigeonhole myself.
That's so funny.
But no, I did the writing.
I'm not going to be an Anderson Cooper type. I think I'm going to stick it to right here.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But then, yeah, so it was like high school going into college. And then it went from TV more into the print aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had to take an English class when I transferred to college, San Francisco State. And I had this English teacher who just crushed me because I wrote an essay. And in red pen, he wrote, like, you have no grasp of the English language. And I think it was because I misspelled the word villain. It was like A-I-N versus I-A-N. I'm like, really?
I still don't know which one is right.
So I think there's a big difference between like English essay writing and journalistic writing. That was my excuse, but it still was very hurtful.
Yeah, that's not nice.
Yeah, but I went on to get a journalism degree despite that.
What did your parents at the time think of like your education or like got your plans to go to college, to go for journalism,
you
to
know,
be a TV reporter, to move into print? Like, what do they think of that?
I have to say, I think of my parents as always being kind of like supportive in what I decided, but I can't say it went much beyond that. Like, they didn't push or nudge or necessarily encourage. It was just like, oh, that's what you're doing. And so I kind of had to figure that stuff out on my own. My sister, Angie, was the first one in our family to go to college.
Right.
So it was like a new world to them. They didn't understand how to navigate that. And so I think they kind of just left it to us to figure out.
Yeah.
Not for any like lack of support or anything like that. It's just that is not what they understood. So they just let us figure it out. But that also meant figuring out financial aid and, you know, things like that. I mean, that was just the position they were in. But I think they were supportive. They weren't too jazzed about, well, I went to San Francisco State, but I planned to go there for their great journalism program.
Yeah.
But at that time is when Dad and I were going to shack up, get an apartment, and I was going to commute from there. So that whole aspect kind of was like, you know. But I started off at Solano Community College. I still lived at home. Yeah. And that's when I met Dad. So,
that's cute.
Yeah.
What a... That's interesting. It sounds like, I mean, Angie went to Cal, right?
She had a little roundabout way of getting to Cal. Well, Angie, she skipped their grade.
Yeah.
Which ended up probably being a big mistake socially and, you know, cursive wise and all that stuff.
Sure.
But anyway, so she was advanced, and so she was a year younger than her peers when she graduated.
Okay.
So she actually transferred right away directly to Sac State. Mm-hmm. But a year later was back at home. So it was one of those, you know, you leave a little too soon. She was a little younger, got overwhelmed, got a little caught up in it.
Yeah.
And so she came back and she did go to Solano Community College for a year, which that was kind of like the kiss of like death. Like, oh, you go away and a year later you're back at the local community college. It was But then she moved in with a group of friends. And then later she transferred to Cal she did great there. I mean, she got like a degree in English lit, I believe.
Who knows?
English.
We'll find out.
Something.
Okay.
Let's fact check this later.
This isn't about her. I'm just curious. Did you...
Angie is turning 50, by the way, year too. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's Angie in March, then your dad in June, and then Angie's husband in October.
Wow.
All turning 50 this year.
Woo. Time flies.
I know.
Okay, so... Well, yeah, that's all right. Okay, how did you feel lost in, like... going to college, like that's a big move, like from community college to San Francisco to shacking up with a strange man who's got a kid. Like, were you ever like, this is overwhelming? Was it hard to navigate? What I don't know. Does it stand out as like challenge in any way?
Here's how I feel about this, and I've thought about this. It's one of those things where you look back. And you're kind of impressed that you did it. In the moment, it doesn't register that way. You just do it. You're like, okay, I'm going to sign up for these classes. I went and met with the counselor for financial aid. You just kind of go step by step. Get up and go on the BART, 5:30 in the morning. You know, do all this stuff. And then you look back. Over the years, you look back and you go, wow, I did all that? Like, I was going to school full time, paid for it. Racked up some debt.
Yeah, girl.
You know what I mean? Came back, worked full time at a family and urgent care, went to bed at like, you know, 1 a.m, only to get up at 5 and start all over the next morning.
Yeah,
it was just, so you kind of look back like, I don't know, I guess when you're young and you just have that adrenaline going and that energy. And it was just, I didn't ever look at it like, wow, look at me. It was just more like, this is what I'm doing. And I look back and I'm proud of it too, though, because I remember back to that Dr. Gostad's office.
Yeah.
Some of the ladies were like, oh, you're making them, you know, you shouldn't be moving in with someone. You should get your degree. And, you know, they just thought I was going to throw everything away because I met someone and I wasn't going to like make my education a priority. So when I look back, I think, no, I did all that and made it work, but also would. Your dad's help, because you know I remember paying for my car insurance with those credit card checks that came. You know, you have a credit card and then they mail you these checks and they're like, hey, look, you could write a check right now.
It's like the cash advance checks, basically.
Time bad news. And I would pay my car insurance with those.
No.
So we were completely kind of on our own when it came to, which I get, you know, why would my parents support that aspect? But but it was that's a lot of debt
in
the beginning when you think about it, you know, and they really rope in those college campus. Hey, 0% interest card. You know, I was pretty naive.
Yeah. Well, and they're predatory.
And they're predatory for sure.
Doesn't make it easy.
But so I think that was a long answer to a good question. Just at the time, I just kind of had a goal in mind, like get my degree, become a journalist, you know, and I just was doing the steps that were needed to accomplish that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm impressed by it. There is very much a, like, you know, you move to a city or you move to and start to work, I guess, going to school in a city. And that's not like, you know, it'll eat you alive.
I do have a fun story about that you said,
well, we don't have time for that. I don't care how fun it is. It might be the best story I've ever heard.
It actually might come back to bite me, but
I do
remember vividly going to San Francisco State to get the financial aid. I wasn't in classes yet. I was doing the pre-stuff. And I remember walking through the quad and seeing these two women just totally start to make out. And being from Fairfield, I'm going to just tell you, yeah. I was just like a little taken aback, like, wow, I really am in San Francisco. Like, wow. That's a thing. And
these freaking lesbians are everywhere.
But it was kind of, I felt very like, wow, I'm in the big city now. And I wasn't like disgusted or anything, Steven. I know what you're thinking.
No,
I wasn't. No. I was just kind of like, that's not something you see in Fairfield.
I'm thinking you're just like, I'm in the big city here. I'm a big girl. And then you go tap one of them on the shoulder like, I'd like to make out as well.
Pucker up. Don't tell
this.
Dad that part of the story, although he might like it.
All right. Delete. That's funny.
Yeah, that was a good little memory.
Okay. Tell me about, tell me your opinion on, like, computers, cell phones, growing technology.
Oh, my God. Because
that's stuff that, like, when you were young, basically didn't exist as much. I mean, they existed.
I know.
You know, cell phones are just fancy telephones, and computers were kind of around, but you probably had limited.
Oh, God. I feel so old answering this question because directly related to my schooling, like I'm thinking of San Francisco State, we had to go do research, and I had to make an appointment at the college library to use the microfiche.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't just search for things.
Right.
And you couldn't, like, look up book summaries and all the stuff we used to get from Cliff's Notes.
Yeah.
Like, it's just at the tip of your fingertips now.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
It's insane.
So I do feel like an old person. Like, I used to have to walk to school in the snow. It's like, yeah, I used to have to, like, go to a library or use a card catalog and actually find what I needed to write research papers.
I mean, I know this isn't the same thing, but I still kind of feel that way, too.
Yeah.
And I'm a different age than you. But I remember going, like, we did have like one or two computers in the Cooper Library, but I remember like you could look up books. You could look up to see if we had books, and I'd do it, and it wasn't accurate. I remember going like, it makes more sense to not use this. It makes more sense to go use our card catalog because we did have that, right? Card catalog?
Yeah,
right?
Card catalog. You're an old soul, Steven.
I am. I'm so old. But I remember like even that. And then, you know, we didn't have the internet or quite the same thing. And even when we did have the internet at first, like it was AOL, we had information, but it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
Now we have all the information on multiple websites. And, you know, you used to have to go AOL keywords and hope you get the right information. You know, we didn't even have a search.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. And it's kind of getting crazier, too.
Yeah.
Like, I have third graders who have nicer phones than most adults.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? And now they come to school wearing these wristwatches that have
Apple
a huge
watches?
Screen.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even know what they're called, but they can call their parents on them. But they can only call certain people.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you can call your parents and your grandparents. But it's weird. It's like, what? And then I think, do you have a calculator in that thing? Like, I'm giving a math test. What's the ability of this thing?
Yeah.
I feel like that old curmudgeon-y teacher.
Yeah.
Put away your computer watch.
Do you think it's, do you think people are too reliant on technology?
Yes.
Or
Yeah, I do. I think it's actually what I've seen, what I think, this is my theory on this.
Yeah.
In the years that I've been teaching, over the past specifically 5 years, but maybe over the past 10, there's just been a shift. Like, I do think it rewires brains. I think that we're teaching in a way that kids aren't used to learning. They just need it like more rapid fire and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think there's a disconnect. I think like their parents are into their technology and not so invested in what their kids are doing or saying or acting. And it's just, I don't know. It just seems like there's been more of a disconnect. Not every family.
Yeah.
But a lot of them. I think like societally, it's become a problem.
Yeah. I'm more and more of the opinion that technology is largely poisonous, and it's a tool that we've not quite, our brains aren't capable of using.
Yeah.
Safely. I worry about it. Like, it just, you talk about like access to information. I feel like people get into it, and I tell people this all the time, and I try to do it myself, but I'm like, don't Google stuff as much.
Right.
Your brain is getting weaker.
It's true.
Remember, like, we used to think about movie quotes, and we used to have to like recall facts and like exercise that part of our brain, and it's exercise, you know, it's making those neural pathways. And now we're like eroding it, because it's like, as soon as you go, oh, you know, like movie quotes, my favorite example of it, because we do that type of thing all the time. And you go like, oh, I know that. What is that from? Take out your phone. And then there's no chance you'll remember
it. You're totally right. I totally agree.
That process.
And Juliet will hate me for bringing this up, but I remember coming in and she was doing homework one day. It was like middle school at least. And she's asking Siri, what's 8 + 7? But it was one calculation in a step of a big problem.
Yeah.
But I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you
like,
can't do that.
But it was a crutch. I think it's become a crutch that now people can't do without. Like,
I think that's true.
And you know that feeling when you forget your cell phone and you have that moment of panic, like, oh my God, I'm going to be disconnected. It's gotten bad.
I truly
you know?
Want a dumb phone. I think I want to downgrade significantly. I want to do that in the next few years. I'm excited about it. But I remember, like, and you know, I agree. I think I do the same thing. I remember I used to go to the store with you and my mom, and we would go to the checkout, and they'd ring us up, and I'd look at the subtotal, and I would figure out what the total would be for the tax. I'd figure it out in my head.
Impressive.
And I'd try to say it before they got it up to see if I could get it right. And I used to, like, nail it sometimes. I used to be pretty good at it.
That's great.
And now I'm like, I don't know what tax is.
Let's Google it.
I got to start with, what is tax? I got to start with the definition.
Some lady asked me the other day, what's our city tax? Didn't it go down? I'm like, I don't know. She goes, well, it was 8.625, and now it's... And I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And why do I care? Because I have to pay it. And then I'm like, well, why did it go down? I don't understand. If they were making that money, why would they go less?
You're so funny.
Yeah.
I love
it. My brain has turned to mush from technology.
Well, given that we're both talking into a computer right now, I think technology's perfect, and I hope it doesn't kill us all.
It does have its perks, for sure.
It does.
Definitely.
Okay. So you've had two careers in your life.
Well, counting Chick-fil-A.
Obviously.
I would have
There's
more.
Chick-fil-A and teacher.
There's Chick-fil-A. There was Warehouse Records.
The optometrist.
I have some stories later about the little adult room, because, you know, back then you couldn't get your porn on technology.
Yeah,
so
sure.
That was a lot of fun.
Did you, what tech stories did you, is that where you went to go get your porn
Well, no, that's where other people went, and they had a hidden camera in that curtained off room.
Okay.
And then we would like pipe our voices in or go, we'd watch a man go in and he's looking for his, you know, adult film. And then I would bop in as the 18-year-old and be like, sir, can I make any recommendations? Can I help you find anything? Like, we just have fun with it. Or the poor wife would have to return the videos. There was no drop-off, no drop box for these videos. So they'd put, like, no man's land up on the counter. And I'm like, so how'd you like this one? And the wife is just mortified. It's just, yeah.
What?
That's back in the olden days, Stephen. People would rent VHS adult movies.
No, I understand
that.
And
they'd have to return them.
I'm mortified that an 18-year-old girl, the voice of God, is, can I make a recommendation?
Yeah.
I'd be like, is this my fantasy happening? What's
Isn't
happening?
That crazy?
That's insane.
All right. And then, yes, the optometrist's office.
Yeah.
But career-wise, yes, journalist. Well, and that included being a reporter, but also a copy editor.
Yeah.
So kind of two different realms of that world. And then I went into teaching. So those are like the two main careers.
So what of those many careers and professions we're going to go with, what are a couple moments, if any, that stand out that you're particularly proud of? That you were like, man, I crushed that. Is there anything where you're like...
Yeah, like when I was a reporter, two stories come to mind that I'm proud of, but also kind of like changed who I am a little bit. And one of those was interviewing Steve Spassato. So I don't know if you recall the 101 California Street Massacre in San Francisco.
No.
But the gunman had an assault weapon. And he went in and he shot up a room full of people, and Jody Spassato from Lafayette was one of them. And she was a young wife and mother in Lafayette, where I was a reporter for a weekly paper.
Yeah.
And Steve Spassato later went on to stand by Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton signed the assault rifle ban, the assault weapon ban. And he was very resistant to being interviewed, and I had to work on that for a long time and kind of win his trust and assure him that I was, you know, doing this for the right reasons, because he did not want, you know, the memory of his wife to just be, you know, thrown out there. And so anyway, I got to meet him. I got to meet his little daughter. I got to interview him, and I was really proud of that story. And he had the pen that Bill Clinton used to sign the legislation, and it was that was pretty powerful. And it was also equally sad when George W. Bush was in office and let that 10-year ban stop. And I just thought, God, I wonder what Steve Sposato thinks, and I wonder if someone's interviewing him. I never heard anything more about him, like, later on. I do know he got remarried and things, but yeah, that was really a powerful story. And then another one was the feature story I did for Thomas Tanimori.
Okay.
And he was a victim of Hiroshima. He was a Japanese boy who was, I think, 8 years old when the bomb was dropped.
Yeah.
And he lost his whole family. He survived, and he later developed blindness from the radiation. And so the reason I met him was he was getting his guide dog. It was like a press release about, hey, this guy in Lafayette is getting a guide dog from the Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, I'll make a feature story out of that. And it ended up being like this huge story to me where I learned all about his history and his path, because he had a very, he had a big struggle. Obviously he lost his family. He had a lot of guilt about surviving. He had a lot of anger.
Of course.
He was suicidal. He came back and found peace. And then I also interviewed Glenn Seaborg from Lafayette, who was part of the Manhattan Project. There's an element named after him, Seaborgium.
Wow.
And Thomas Tanimori wanted to meet Glenn Seaborg.
Yeah.
And even came with me to UC Berkeley to do the interview. And Glenn Seaborg said, no, that's not happening.
Wow.
I'm not going to meet a victim of Hiroshima.
Yeah.
And like, but that could have been a really powerful story right there.
You had the angle.
But I, I didn't get it.
That's tough.
And then one other that I got an award for was back when I was at San Francisco State. I got a Best News Feature Award for writing a story. It was like a descriptive story about being up on the roof of the quad or something. Actually, that was not, that is not correct. Edit that out. I wrote a really cool story about that, but the one I got the award for was about someone who worked on staff who had died of AIDS.
Okay.
And it was a news feature story about him.
Huh.
So that I got an award for, so I was pretty psyched about that.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
It sounds like, I mean, what's impressive, I think, about like just journalism in general, but also your career is like you just, you covered so much. You went into so many stories, and I think like connected with a lot of people. That's something I always think about you, and just connecting with people. But like, I mean, is that something that you think is like particularly satisfying for you? Is that one of your favorite things to do? And then I guess with that, like, why did you stop? Because you ultimately moved on from being a reporter to a teacher.
Okay, that's a good question. I did love connecting with people.
Yeah.
I didn't like connecting like with planning commission meetings.
What's that? I don't know. Or just give me
so,
the
So like I had the general beat of Lafayette. So I would cover everything, the schools, the police, the city hall, the planning, the crime.
Okay.
And what I don't, I'll be honest, I don't think I'm smart enough to get a lot of that government stuff and like to cover both sides of it. So I remember being criticized like, well, you never put our side of the story into it. And I'm like, well, I just didn't understand that side of the story. I'm sorry. And my editor really should have caught that. So
that's funny.
Yeah. And speaking of editor catches, I'll throw this one in. I wrote something about, I don't even know, the Great Lakes. And someone called after the publication came out, and they were like, oh my God, your reporter, she misspelled Lake Huron. She wrote the bird heron, H-E-R-O-N. Uh-huh. And she misspelled Lake Erie. She wrote Erie like spooky, double E. And my editor came back to me. She goes, oh, I told him it was a spell check issue. And I'm like, oh, it really wasn't.
That's so funny.
I just goofed. But ultimately, why I got out of, well, the end of my journalism career, I was the education writer exclusively at the Vacaville Reporter.
I remember.
And so that took me into a lot of schools and classrooms, and I kind of got a feel for like, oh, this is, I could see myself doing this. And then I had a lot of friends who were teachers, and it's like, really, you know, summer's off and you like your job and you know what I mean? And so I kind of made the transition, but ultimately I am not good with conflict. So while I did like connecting with people, I did not like conflict. And one story in particular, I was in Lafayette and there was a UC Berkeley professor who had been accused of being a peeping Tom. And I accompanied the Lafayette police to do a search of his home, which was funny. I was in the back seat of their patrol car riding from Lafayette to Berkeley. So everyone like thought I was a suspect. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But we get to the home to do a search. And I vividly remember his wife being there.
Oh, no.
And I just felt so uncomfortable for her. And I think ultimately to cover those like harder hitting stories or stories with conflict, I always kind of sympathize with the person in the hot seat, whether they deserve to be there or not. Like this poor woman didn't. I mean, her husband was right. the issue, but right. I just felt so bad being the one who had to put them on the spot. I don't like putting people on the spot. So ultimately, I think the conflict of that, like just that emotional, you know, ethical conflict, like yeah. I'm supposed to do my job, but I really kind of want to give this lady an out, you know, like or even the guy. It was so awkward and uncomfortable interviewing someone in that position. It's like, right. I don't like this feeling.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I got out of that, went into teaching and discovered a whole new type of conflict.
Yeah, exactly.
Mainly with parents.
That's 100%
true. And 8-year-olds.
Wow.
No, but yeah. But it was actually a really good career switch.
Yeah.
Especially, speaking of technology, just considering how much journalism got affected. And I mean, my yeah. first year in journalism, I think I was making $19,000 a year.
Yeah.
And so if you think about how,
they're down to 12.
Yeah. Internet. Yeah. yeah. How everything in journalism, like print journalism completely, especially local print journalism, yeah. you know? And so that ended up being a really smart decision to get out of that and get yeah. into teaching. Yeah.
Well, I still subscribe to the New York Times. I want you to know that. So well, I would have kept you alive.
That's a good one. But I don't know if I'd be working at the New York Times.
Yeah,
that's the difference. That's the difference. Vacaville Reporter.
Vacaville Reporter. Yeah, I remember you getting a few hot scoops on a young, a dashing boy about town. I don't know what his name was, but yes. I know he was interesting.
That was super cute because my byline was Robert. So even though we were related,
yeah.
no one made the connection.
Sneaky.
It was like our own little secret.
Yeah.
Remember doing that cover shoot in Lafayette on the front of the like Christmas issue?
Oh my
it was
God,
the
no.
editor's son and you. Her name was Gail Melvin and her son was Andrew.
Okay.
And she's like, you know, we have to do this holiday insert and we need some cute kids on the cover.
Yeah.
How about our boys? You know, yeah. it's always girls in little holiday dresses and how about the boys?
Yeah.
I have to see if I have a copy of that somewhere.
That's so funny.
I mean, you were little, really little.
I don't remember
but
that.
But yeah, I mean, really... I think I launched your career with these front page stories.
Yeah, they basically haven't stopped.
The salad bar at Cooper Elementary.
Yeah, I remember sitting in a plane or something or a helicopter. I don't know. Yeah,
yeah
you're right.
It's true.
That's crazy. that's so funny. Well, okay, yeah. So like, yeah, and then we used to hang out a lot when I was young. I remember that. We used to go to like, yeah, we'd always go shopping. We'd hang out. We'd go to the city and stuff.
Sometimes by accident.
Sometimes by accident. I remember thinking that was so cool. Like we accidentally drove over the bridge and you're like, I guess we're just going to go to the city. We're going to make lemonade out of lemons. And I think you said that. And
yeah.
I was like, huh, cool.
That ended up being a fun day.
It was a fun day.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was the most fun, but I just remember being like so... impressed by that, like lack of fluster that came with this weird choice.
There was
you made.
No other lane to go in, Stephen.
That's
we were
so
set.
Funny.
We had just dropped Dad off at the airport in Oakland.
Okay,
he
yeah.
was flying down to go help Uncle John with
okay.
his business, and we dropped him off, and we were heading back to Vacaville, and lo and behold, I was on that road going to the bridge.
Yeah, that's so funny.
But that was fun. Yeah, I remember.
Oh, that's so funny.
We bought those. We bought those little stress balls,
yeah.
but I think maybe later in life I learned that those were meant for something else.
I don't know. We'll never know what they're really for. Maybe it's better nobody does.
I was a very bad influence, I think.
Yeah. It's been a time. I get it. Well, and then, yeah, like people used to... What was it like having a stepson? Because you were like... especially when you're young, you know, you're very young, you have this kid in your life, strange man's kid coming around, he's never around, I'm always around. I mean, what was that like? Was it harder for you kind of like, Because it feels like in one way you're jumping in the middle of it.
It was a lot of fun.
Okay.
If I'm going to be super honest,
yeah,
I did not know your dad had a kid.
Yeah.
When I agreed to meet him,
yeah.
Which I didn't think that day he came by with the box was the meeting day. But
yeah,
I just thought initially, you know, I probably won't meet someone who already has a kid because I knew he was getting divorced.
Right.
And but honestly, Stephen, like, it was a lot of fun. Once I met you and once I had fallen hard for dad, it was like a package deal from the start.
Right.
And I loved it. And in a way, it was more like being that big sister role.
Yeah.
Or babysitter role, because dad was working nights. He was working weekends. And I know, much to your mom's dismay, which I totally get now, like having kids of my own. Yeah. You were supposed to be seeing your dad and he was hardly there,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that being said, I think, you know, we had a lot of fun and we bonded and we developed a nice relationship over the years. So
big sister or babysitter role. I never really thought of it like that, but yeah, 100%. That's what was going on.
I didn't like take it on right away. Like, okay, I'm his stepmother or I'm his other mother. It wasn't even like that. It was more like it was fun to take you out and let's go to this festival and let's go make this, you know, craft together. And back when I was young and energized and just, I thought it was a lot of fun.
You were
were a fun kid.
Of course I am.
You were funny and sweet. You were a lot of fun.
I was. Yeah. I mean, looking back, I think like I was bewildered at how much stuff we did together, because I was like, wow, you just, what energy. Like, I couldn't do that now. Like, I imagine trying to do that with kids. I'd be like,
I probably
even
now,
I'm like, oh, God. No. You got to take them out like every weekend. God damn.
So the timing kind of worked out well, because it was before all that kind of kicked in.
Before you lost the energy.
Before I lost the energy after having my own. But it was fun because it wasn't all the time. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this is our
two days
with Steven. And then you can just like cram it all in and make it what you want. But it's different when you're with someone 24/7.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the homework and with the, I mean, we got to enjoy the funner side of having a kid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that wasn't always hard, or that wasn't always easy for your mom, because she had the other end of it. But, but I enjoyed my time with you a lot.
So tell me about dad proposing.
So we're going to jump right to that.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of spots. I mean, do you have other things you'd like to fill
in? Not at all. I have a good one about this. So dad proposing was a complete surprise to me, which sounds silly since we had already been together and we're living together. So you would almost think it would be assumed, like, kinda, okay, when's he pop on the question?
Yeah.
But I really did not expect it. I just was going with the flow, going to school, living together, doing our thing. And so he had made New Year's plans to go to Monterey, which at the time, neither of us had ever visited. So it was like a total new destination. And we were going to leave after his graveyard shift. Well, lo and behold, he ended up snagging a drunk driver right at the end of his shift. And that always takes forever. It's a nightmare paperwork. Well, it got worse because the guy would not give up his identification. So what turned into like a little overtime ended up being like no sleep for dad. He had to come home. We go to Monterey. So one night only in Monterey, 24 hours. That's it. And we went to El Torito for dinner. And I should have been
that
wise.
One on the waterfront?
It's the one on the water. And I should have been wise to him. I should have known, because it was the first time ever. He's like, so do you want to get dessert? And I thought, what? But he never asks if I want to get dessert. Like,
What's that commercial that was from the day? It's like, he never has a second cup at home.
Yeah, it was weird. I was like, what? But, and I think maybe I did get dessert. I can't remember. And so we went back to the Monterey Plaza Hotel, and it was late, and there's this little bench that overlooks the ocean. I mean, it's gorgeous there, right on the water. And we're sitting on this bench, and he just kind of starts to talk about, you know I've been married before, but I want you to know, like, this is, you know, and I can't articulate how he said it exactly, and I'm kind of, my head is spinning, and he opens up this box with a ring, and I'm just like, stunned. I was really surprised. And inside, my first thought was, oh my gosh, I don't know if I could do this, because it was a big step, you know,
like
actually say yes.
Yeah.
But I did say yes, and it worked out pretty well. But I did want to make sure I we waited until I graduated college before we got married. So we had a long engagement. So like a
how long was it?
Like 2 years.
Wow.
2 years because I graduated in May of 93 and we got married in November of 93. But he proposed it was back in
91.
It was 91, New Year's Day, 91. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. So I mean, I guess I must have known. See, it's weird. Like looking back on your guys' relationship or even like my mom and Gary, I was like, yeah, you guys were like always together.
Yeah, to you, I would think you would see that way.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I didn't even realize like there was a long proposal. That's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. Because you were real little.
So tiny.
Yeah.
So tiny. Did Dad talk to me about it? Did I give him? Did I give the okay?
You know what? I would hope that he knew you would be okay with it. I will tell you this, coming back to before the proposal, we did have like a date one day. It was going to be a double date with Dave and Gina.
Yeah.
And I remember Dad saying, nope, I can't make it. I have Steven that weekend. And I remember thinking, wow, good. You know, like I really admired that. I think that's probably one of the things that attracted me most to Dad was that he was a good and dedicated father. You know what I mean?
Man. Yeah.
And if he had ditched your weekend to come on a date with me, that wouldn't be attractive. I wouldn't have
respected that. But you would have never known.
That. What if I found out years later? That could have destroyed everything.
It could have.
Yeah. But he didn't. And that's the kind of person he is. So.
Okay. What originally was the most difficult thing about being married? Or what struck you as like a difference, difficulty, thing that was different than you thought it would
be? Okay. Well, being married to someone in law enforcement is difficult because, well, one, he had a wacky schedule. He would be coming home as I was leaving to go to work. So as I'm having like coffee and breakfast, he's coming home and popped a beer and had lasagna. That same hour of the day. That's kind of, but, he was gone a lot because of his shifts. That was hard. But also, and he was gone a lot early on to go down and help John with his business.
Yeah.
So I think kind of those periods of not being together and you're young, like I remember they went out, you know, like, oh, we went out to a bar with some of John's friends. And, you know, there's that insecurity of being a young bride and early on and stuff. Those things were a little challenging. But, being married, I think we just kind of kept doing things the same for quite a while. I was still working and Dad was working. I mean, it was kind of like the same situation as before we got married. So it wasn't like, oh, boom, you're married. And now there's going to be a lot of changes. We kind of kept going the same. And then when we bought our house, things were a little different. You know, then it was more like getting settled and being the married couple.
Right.
But, I think I just would go through just... You just go with things, go with the flow.
Yeah.
And then when you look back on it, then you're like, oh, yeah, that was a little hard. But at the time, it wasn't like, oh, this is so hard. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. Well, what about it was most satisfying about being married? Like, what was it? Was there anything you're like, oh, this is the best?
Yeah, you know, and this is kind of grown throughout the years, but to have like a common goal with someone, I think Dad and I got really lucky in that we kind of grew together. We didn't have different goals. We had similar goals. And so to kind of have a teammate to accomplish goals together, you know, we wanted to buy a house or we, you know, later on wanted to have kids. That was back and forth. But just wanting to, you know, we had similar interests. And so all that seemed really easy to just want to, oh, let's go on a trip. And I think part of it is that back to me avoiding conflict. I just kind of went along with everything. So, you know, I didn't like dig my heels in. No, I don't want to go on this big, you know, trip with your family or whatever. Just like go with it. And it ended up working out.
To not have strong opinions.
Yeah, not like? Having strong opinions, which sometimes is probably not good. But in some ways it works out well because it makes life smooth.
I get it.
But it wasn't that I had to go along with something I didn't want to do. I just did it and I was like, yeah, that was fine, you know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm not really that strongly opinionated. Is that bad? No, I feel like that's a negative.
I don't know. I don't think so. Okay, what advice would you give to somebody who's contemplating a serious relationship today?
Is this about you now, Steven?
No, I actually mean it more generally, but I am interested what you think.
You know, here would be my advice. I think...
Because, Steph, I've got strong opinions. I've got it all figured out.
Yeah, I know you do. I think I'd have to say, and this goes back to Dad going on that weekend with you instead of a date with me. I think the best advice I would give to someone, especially if they're going to have kids, is pick the person you know is going to be a good father to your kids. Like, you know, and because really that encompasses so much, like being a good husband. You can't be a good father without being a good husband in a way is mm-hmm. how I feel. Like all those qualities kind of come into play. So I think picking someone who you just, Dad has those qualities where, or my advice, pick someone who has those qualities like patience and respect. I think a lot of it is mutual respect. You have to pick someone with mutual respect. And Dad and I come back to that a lot when I talked about that teamwork. It wasn't just him carrying me. Definitely it wasn't vice versa.
Right.
But like we each pulled our own weight and kind of, you know, did things together. And I think more than anything, that's what someone should look for is like a teammate, like a partner, a true partner in what you want to do and has those qualities that are needed for that. Patience, respect. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I like it.
Not everyone has those qualities.
Patience and respect?
Yeah, they
0%.
Don't. I mean, a lot of people, short temper, you know, moody. I have to say Dad is very even keeled.
That's not true.
Yeah, he doesn't get high or low. He's kind of, you know, even. And that's a good quality in someone.
I agree with that. So right now we're at like 55 minutes.
Oh, boy.
And I have a ton more questions.
Oh, boy.
So I'm like, can I get away with doing a part two later? Can I get away with being in this restaurant for longer? I'm just trying to evaluate a little.
Let's judge this guy's looks. Is he eyeballing us?
They have been. What time are you guys leaving tomorrow?
Probably pretty early. Yeah, long drive home. I have to work the next day.
Shit.
However, we are going to be back in April.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
But it might be hard to find some time.
Yeah, that might be hard.
And you have to do it face-to-face. Can't be over the phone or anything, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to just say I'll make it happen in April.
You think so?
Yeah, because you'll be down for Disneyland.
You don't want to rapid-fire me some of those hard-hitting questions?
I mean, I've truly got a billion. It's insane.
Wow.
I'm so interested in this. And plus, you've got a lot of things to say.
Yeah, maybe I rambled a little bit.
No, it's all really gold.
Edit some of it out. Make me sound good.
Well, I'll say this is like, just in case we don't get to it.
Okay.
Because there's so much to talk about. Like, we haven't talked about Matthew and Juliet, like, being in your life. And that's a 16-year period that we've thus far skipped. But I'll say this is like, my little wrap up on it would be, you know, Steph, I've always thought of you as, I think you're actually weirdly defined by your two careers in a way. Like, I think you are like, you are those two things. You are a reporter and you're engaged and you're learning and you're curious and you're social and you're, just able to bond with people in a way that I've always really admired. And you are a teacher and you're patient and you're, you know, for the most part.
Yeah, I was going to say, not always.
And you're sharing and you're very kind and you're very, very sweet. And, I've always really appreciated those two things about you. You've always been like just a great influence to have around, for me personally. And I think for the kids too, and probably Dad. And we're all very lucky to have you, in our lives.
Well, that's so sweet. You're going to make me cry.
Cool. But I think we all appreciate that, that like that, even though I think all the kids and everybody will give you a hard time for connecting with people and whatever, I do think we all appreciate it and deeply admire it. And it's something that I personally am always striving a little bit to go like, can I be more like Steph? Can I be nicer?
Oh,
can I get people to, can I connect with more people? Can I do it? Is it possible? So I just want to say that I really admire that. And I think you're great.
That's very sweet, Stephen.
And I think Dad's lucky to have you in his life.
Well, I feel the same, and I think that all of us together have a synergy and a dynamic where we all have our different strengths, and we all learn from each other in that way, you included, and we're quite a team. Go Team Pearlstein.
Pearlstein. back to the escape room. We got out.
Oh, that was so awesome.
No big deal.
That was awesome.
All right. Well, is there anything, just in case, on the off chance that we do not get to do this again, I'm going to aim to do it.
Is
there anything else that you want to?
There's one thing I specifically want to say, because as when you told me we were going to do this interview, I thought, gosh, I hope I say, you know, what I want to say.
Yeah.
There's one thing that kind of I kept coming back to, and I think in a way it sums everything up too.
Ooh.
And in honor of Dad on his 50th birthday and everything. Boy, he is just like, there's so many great things about Dad, in my opinion. Like, I love the guy, but he is the ultimate provider.
Yeah.
He, and not just financially, he has provided a home, you know, a job. He's provided security. He's provided opportunities for all of us. I mean, you kids, anything you guys want to do, pursue, follow, he provides chances for you to do that. You know, whether it's taking you on a trip to New York, whether it's getting you Final Cut, you know, program for your computer, whether it's having Juliet, you know, shadow the DA. I mean, he's a provider. And ultimately, I know he has to be proud of what he's accomplished, because he has worked so hard. I mean, he's worked really hard. And, but I know he feels a great sense of accomplishment because of how you kids have turned out. I mean, you're his greatest accomplishment. But that's what I feel, is like he's provided for all of us and will continue to provide for us. And I know he feels great about that.
Yeah.
It's a lasting legacy.
I love it.
Yeah. So
wipe the tears from your eyes.
I know. This is embarrassing. It wasn't on TV. No one had to know.
Nobody had to know.
All right.
All right. Well, we're going to be back for part two.
Thanks.
But I think that's a good out for part one.
All right. We're out. Mic drop.